What's up, all of you beautiful people in Cycling Oklahoma Nation, or state, or I guess nation, and actually worldwide, because we do have people, I don't know who they are, that download every episode from all over the place. So super cool. Speaking of all over the place, this episode is one of a local legend that I did not know about until I actually started the podcast. And Forrest has been was a huge member of the mountain bike cycling scene back in the day, and moved away and worked for Trek over the past, I think we said, like 18 years or so. He moved away to Wisconsin, has worked for Trek for a really long time, and now works for a startup e-bike company. So Forrest, when I tell people I sat down and talked to him and got him on the podcast, everybody's like, oh my God, Forrest was the man. He was so fast. They started to start telling me all these stories. I'm like, dang it, I wish I would have had all these stories and this information before I sat down with him. But Forrest reached out to me really shortly after the podcast started and said that he really enjoyed listening, and it kind of helped him reconnect with Oklahoma and all of his old riders. And he knew a lot of the guys that we were talking to and that he used to ride with them, and kind of started with them whenever he was riding and getting into bikes and stuff. So it was super cool for him to reach out and say, man, I think I got some cool stories to share. And then to find out how much of a local legend he was in the mountain bike scene is really, really cool. So Forrest was in town and we sit down and chatted. And so everybody out there that has been in the Oklahoma cycling scene for a while, I think you will really enjoy this one and get some good nuggets out of this. Forrest was an absolute great, great, great guy. And I can't say thanks enough to him for sitting down and chatting and taking the time out of his schedule whenever he was in town to get this done. So we've been trying to do this actually several times when he's come to Oklahoma, and we finally were able to make that work. So I hope you really enjoy this one. With the winter and spring season here in Oklahoma is in full swing. The gravel races are kicked off and going. The mountain bike is right around the corner with Tour de Dirt starting up in about a month, actually. We got some 6-hour races that have been happening. So it is the dirt season, and I hope everyone is out there enjoying that. And we got some really cool things coming if I would just sit down and finish them up with Cycling Oklahoma. So hopefully I'll get that on board in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully we have some really cool podcasts recorded and or planned to be recorded over the next couple of weeks. So I think you're really going to enjoy the next handful of episodes. They're going to be really, really, really cool. And none of this is possible without every one of you listening and telling other people about it. If you have people that you want to hear on here, let me know. If you want to be on here, let me know. And I want to say thank you so much to More Overhead Door for their continued support of the podcast. They have been an absolute game changer for the things that we're going to be able to do in this coming year, and I can't thank them enough. So if you have a garage door need, if you're building a house and need to get your garage door set for your house, you want to upgrade it, you got repairs that need to happen, please reach out to More Overhead Door. They're supporting us, supporting our cycling community. They are racers themselves. And if we can support them, please, please, please do that because they support us. So More Overhead Door, they are located in Moore, Oklahoma. The phone number is 405-799-9214. Absolutely great people over there, and I can't recommend them enough. So thank you so much for their support. Guys, the weather is hopefully getting better soon. Get out, play bikes, hang out with your friends, enjoy everything that comes with getting outside and riding bikes. And it's just, as Evan said on his podcast episode, miles and smiles. So let's make it happen. Play bikes, miles and smiles, and I hope you have a wonderful day. All right, Forrest, we're officially rolling now. This is going to be a good one because you actually have been following the podcast really since kind of the beginning.
Since about the beginning.
Yeah. And yeah. You reached out to me very early on. You're like, dude, I think I got some fun stories to tell.
It could be.
And so I'm excited for this because I, outside of the messages over the years that we've shared through social, I don't know anything about you. I intentionally didn't look anything up outside of just a few of your pictures and stuff like that, because I didn't want to ruin this conversation. I wanted to kind of get to know you as all the listeners get to know you. So I think briefly just start out with who you are, where you're at now, and then we'll kind of go back to the beginning and how cycling got you going.
Okay. Well, Forrest Smith, where I'm at now is I live in Wisconsin. I was in Oklahoma, born and raised in Davis, Oklahoma.
Okay.
The home of Turner Falls and Arbuckle Mountains.
Yeah.
Went to college in Norman at OU.
Okay.
Where I spent really the majority of my 20s and 30s. Through the bike racing career in quotes, and met a girl, we got married, moved to Wisconsin.
Okay.
Got a job at Trek, where I worked for almost 16 years.
Okay.
And that's where I am now.
Okay.
Not at Trek.
You're not at Trek anymore.
Not at Trek. We had a
the PC way to say it.
Yeah. No, it's, they had a contraction, I suppose.
Contraction. You know, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. Okay. Was that post COVID?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. COVID presented some unique challenges.
I'd be interested to hear more about that in detail. Because seeing it from the inside of the industry on that side of the industry, because I went through it on the bike fit side of the industry, on the retail piece of it. So I'm really interested to dig into that with you a little bit, just kind of hear some thoughts of that.
Yeah. I mean, for one, I remember the day that, the lockdown was announced or whatever, they were like, everybody go home. Take what you need. Don't come into the office until further notice, and we were working from home, and these messages came from upper management. Oh, we don't know what the future is going to bring, so be prepared. People might lose their jobs. There might be consequences.
Right.
And we're like, oh no. Oh, and then suddenly bikes started selling. And it was like the bread and butter bikes, the $400, the 820s gone. The $1,000 bikes gone. Mm-hmm. Then the $3,000 bikes sold out. And then suddenly it was like people had no problem buying the most expensive bike that they could buy, because it was the only bike that they could buy, and they would just buy them. You're like,
what's going on?
And then suddenly, this was how the boom looked from inside. It's like, oh my God, well, we got to better put in orders for bikes. We got to get bikes in the warehouse. And I remember there was a time, when our central warehouse in Johnson Creek, Wisconsin, you could look from one end of this warehouse to the other and see the other wall, which it should be completely full of bikes.
Yeah.
And it's just an empty building. And it was just so weird.
Heavy, eerie.
It was really weird. Yeah.
Really weird.
And so now there aren't any bikes to sell and there's no parts. Mm. It's just really weird. So that these huge orders got placed for bikes, and the way the vendors work and, overseas is whoever has the biggest order and pays up front
gets to the top of the list,
gets their bikes first.
I listened to some really interesting cycling business podcasts about that, how it was a great business tactic for the big players of like Trek, Specialized, those guys, to crush the little guys because they could push them out because they wouldn't be able to get parts, which it's business, it sucks, but it's business. And so it was very interesting.
Yeah. And that's kind of how it works, and then, the suppliers were building new factories to meet the demands. And then, because there's always a lag, Trek kind of got ahead of it pretty early and started reining things in, but still, the vendors are already, they're already up and running.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh no, you're taking these bikes. And now, and then everybody who's now all the consumers who have bought all of the bikes and have gone back to work, they're not going to buy it. They're not going to buy another $5,000 bike. They've got a nice bike and they might not even ride it. They might sell it.
Yep.
And so now the market is just kind of flooded with,
right. With well, bikes. Now that you're seeing the industry just having a fire sale. Yeah. I mean, I had a buddy send me, it was a Scott, mountain bike. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's a Spark. It's a really nice bike.
Sweet bike.
Really sweet bike. And I've looked at those forever. I mean, before I bought the two that I have now, it was the bike that I really wanted back then. And I just couldn't pull the trigger on the price tag for it. But now he sent it to me and it's like, gosh, I think it was like 30% off brand new. And I'm like, oh, yeah. So maybe and springtime will be a time because it's not, those sales aren't going away anytime soon.
No, they're not. I wasn't really that, you know, like the job that I had wasn't really super, super into sales. You know, it was more mm-hmm. product support. But it's just really, yeah, you're just not seeing the demand for bikes like it was, mm-hmm. and everybody's got them on sale. Everybody's got too many bikes. And
well, while we're on that topic, how do you see the industry before we go back to your beginnings in cycling? How do you see the industry continuing over the next, like say 18, 24 months? Do you think it'll be the local retailers that take the first hit, or do you think it'll be brands that start to like get absorbed by each other and merge to survive? Like, cause something's going to have to happen.
So yeah, something is definitely going to happen. You know, I've visited a few shops, you mm-hmm. know, and it's, you know, like, and just even up in Wisconsin, just things are slow. It's a slow time of the year.
Yeah.
In general.
On top of it. Yeah.
But
yeah, I mean,
just bikes just really aren't selling. And, you know, sometimes it's like the higher end bikes, you know, because mm-hmm. the people who are going to buy the super expensive bikes are always going to buy those bikes mm-hmm. because they got to have the new thing.
Right.
And they can afford it.
Right.
You know? But like those mom and pop, you know, like the bread and butter bikes, yeah. you know, whatever is like we call them. It's
yeah.
just kind of like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, Trek, Specialized, and Giant. And, you know, the big three or the big four uh-huh. are always going to be there. And, uh-huh. but I think, you know, just some of the, they're going to be brands disappearing.
I'm yeah. Sure. Do you think they'll just go out of business, go away? Or you think brands like a Trek would go in? Cause I don't know if they do this stuff or not. I mean, yeah. do they go in and buy smaller brands?
In the past they did, you know, okay. cause you know, I mean, you know, Fisher and LeMond.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Among mm-hmm. those. But
so
I,
maybe you see a little bit of that again, maybe
it's possible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm no industry expert
yeah.
like that.
It just depends, I guess, if they have the technology that they want or something like that.
Yeah. 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 I mean, there's a lot, there's just so many good bikes out there.
So many,
you know, cause you know, just paying attention to what's out in the world. It's uh-huh. just really like, you know, like there are some small brands doing really awesome stuff.
I was talking to a buddy about that on a ride the other day. Because in Oklahoma City, you kind of just see the big brands. Like our shops here kind of only carry the big brands for the most part. Mm-hmm. You have ones like Capital. I mean, he carries like Allied and see what else has he got? He's got Factor. And I think there's a couple shops. Buchanan's carries Pivot. You know, yeah. so those aren't ones that you see everywhere.
Yeah.
But the other shops carry the Trek, Specialized, Cannondale, Giant, mm-hmm. those kinds. In Wisconsin, I don't know if do most shops carry Trek clearly?
Yeah, there's a big Trek presence.
That yeah,
for
but,
sure.
But there's so many brands that are overseas or in other parts, like small communities that are just great branded
yeah,
bikes.
You know, like
you just don't see them here.
I was always a fan of Kona. You know, like I did a little, you know, like my last good season of racing, uh-huh. I raced on Kona.
Uh-huh.
And that's just a really cool company. They're just really down to earth, really, really, really good dudes.
Yep.
And they build really good bikes, but they're just totally under the radar. You just don't really see them. I don't even know if there's a Kona dealer in Wisconsin that I'm aware of.
I don't think I've ever seen it here.
No, but you know, it's just, they're just a cool bike.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, my last mountain bike was a Niner. Loved it.
Yeah.
Nobody carries Niner here.
Yeah. Those are sweet bikes.
Yeah. There's so many cool brands.
Yeah. Pivot, like you said.
Pivot, yeah.
Ibis, you know,
they're,
you know, I got, or tried out the XE, you know, their mm-hmm. cross country race bike last fall, and I was like, oh shit, this thing is badass. Uh-huh. You know, yeah. I'm like, all right, well, might have to swap the Super Cal for the XE, you know, and like
try to, yeah. Just are like, you still in the bike industry now?
Sort of. I work for a company called Fuel.
Okay.
Which is It's actually the guys, if you're familiar with Buell Motorcycles.
Okay.
Uh-huh. It's basically the engineering team from there and Eric Buell.
Okay.
And they have, it's a startup of e-bikes and eventually an e-motorcycle.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, it's like when I got let go from track, you know, I was like, oh crap, what am I going to do? I'm actually really good friends with Eric Buell. Like, this is kind of connecting back to the music side of things. He and uh-huh. I played in a band together, and we became really good friends. And he was like, well, you know, like, if you need something to do, you know, I can just set you up here. You can do it however long you want. And so I kind of just like stepped in and I'm like, oh, well, this is different. This uh-huh. is not track, you know, yeah. There's like no glass doors, you know, there's yeah. like no cafeteria or on-site, you know, on-site.
True startup.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, yeah. And so
are they just like e-commuting bikes, e-mountain bikes?
It's e-commuting bikes.
Okay.
It's,
gotcha.
The whole purpose is like urban mobility.
Gotcha.
Like a fast long range commuter bike.
Okay.
And it's not really, you know, it's a e-bike for people who aren't really cyclists, because it doesn't use like a traditional bicycle drivetrain. It uses, you know, it's a motor and gearbox as one unit.
Interesting.
And it's just a belt drive,
uh-huh.
you know, like a single speed belt drive with an internal transmission in the mid drive motor.
Interesting.
So, you know, like if you've ever ridden an e-bike or dealt with e-bikes or serviced them, you know, they're just brutal on chains and mm-hmm. cassettes and, you know, just like
yeah.
the whole drivetrain just suffers immensely. And this is just a Gates belt drive, and it's just like zero maintenance.
It's perfect for all weather conditions.
Yeah, and it's just perfect for the application because it requires no maintenance. And these typically the commuting crowd, they don't want to mess around,
and they don't know that's not their thing. That's not why they're in it.
Yeah, they just want to get on the bike and pedal and go.
Right,
and that's what this bike does.
It interesting.
Yeah. Huh. So
well, that's cool.
Yeah.
And so, is there a spinoff? So you see like Silicon Valley, where like you have, they all are there. Like every tech brand is there, right? Because they just all spin off of each other, and one started there and then another one, the talent. Is it like that around Trek? Is there other like little spinoff companies that are cycling industry related just because Trek is in that part of the country?
Sort of, you know, there is quite a cycling industry presence in Wisconsin because you've got Trek, and then mm-hmm. you have Hayes, mm-hmm. You know, which is, Hayes is the parent company of Manitou Suspension and, you know, the Answer brand, you know, mm-hmm. so you have all of that, and that's in Mequon, Wisconsin, which is just a little north of Milwaukee. And then in Madison, there's, like Mongoose and okay. Suntour, like, Suntour Forks, you know, like you think it was kind of a low end, you know, it is kind of they get a lot of low to mid-range spec on mountain okay. bikes. But they do make some high-end race forks that are, you know, actually on the World Cup, you know, like really
interesting,
nice. Really, really cool. You know, like electronically, you know, electronic valve, you know, it's just like, I'm like, oh wow. Something I'll look into, but yeah there's like a, there's a lot of, you know, oh, and then Planet Bike, there used to be a brand of components, you know,
okay.
they used to make lights and locks,
okay.
and just kind of like
okay.
little doodads mm-hmm. and thingamajigs, you know, and mm-hmm. like, and that was.
Is Bontrager up there? Or is it?
Bontrager's owned by Trek.
Yeah. Do they have it there with?
Yep.
Okay. It's,
right
it's all
there,
in
right
the house.
There in HQ. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
All the engineering and development product.
Okay.
Is all there. And yeah, so that's there. Trying to think what else is there. I know there's something that I'm not thinking of. Well, you know, and SRAM is in Chicago.
Yep. So it's all right there in the same area.
Kind of all there. And then in Waterford, you know, if, like the old Waterford, the original Richard Schwinn, like the spinoff from the Schwinn family, he was in Waterford, Wisconsin.
Gotcha.
They made high-end steel custom really, really nice steel frames. And they just recently closed down.
It's gotcha. Like, oh, oh.
No. It's like, no, it's like one of the icons, you know, one of the icons of cycling, you know, like American made frames.
Finally, it's time, huh?
Yeah. He was, you know, they was getting at retirement age.
And gotcha.
Nobody wanted to compete in, you know, in
that's
that segment.
That's a tough business.
Yeah.
Steel
yeah.
frame. That's a tough gig.
Yeah. Especially now with carbon as good as it is. It's like there's no,
you just have it because you want it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Thai bikes. Like, I mean, they're beautiful. They're super cool. Mm-hmm. They're expensive. And it's just, you have a Moots because you just have the money and you want a Moots.
Yeah. I will admit, Moots has always been like in my radar, you know, they're just always so unattainable.
I'm there's so many beautiful titanium custom builder out there now that it's just, you get it because you want it, not because of, I mean, people that own Thai bikes might argue with me on that, but like you get a Thai bike because you want a Thai bike and they're just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For performance.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a performance aspect, but if you want, like, I mean, seriously, if you want the most,
you're not beating carbon at this point.
You're not going to beat carbon.
Not at this point.
Mm-mm. You know, and that was another cool thing about working for Trek, seeing how it happens from the inside.
Pretty cool.
It's like, oh, damn. And like, and another thing is like, I will never say a bad word about them, because like the people who work there and the people who make the bikes and design them and engineer them are like, they're real, you know, they're like you and me, they're writers. They're not people who came from the refrigerator manufacturer.
They're not just an engineer.
They're just like, oh, well, this is a, it just has to meet this, just has to fit in this equation and we'll, you know, and it's fine. You know, it's like everybody rides. And if they're not like a hardcore rider when they start, you know, like you just see some amazing transformations of
you're just
of
in guys. That community. You don't have a choice.
Yeah. Like, you know, you see the guy coming in kind of out of college and he's, you know, he's doesn't look very fit, you know, and then suddenly you're like, holy shit, this dude just lost like 50 pounds and he's just crushing people.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because the culture there really, it really promotes being.
Well, I watched that. Well, I don't know where the documentaries and all that stuff live now, but GCN Plus had that Trek documentary.
Yeah.
And I watched that a while back and it was really good. And they talked about, you know, the lunchtime rides and the trails out behind in the barn and all that kind of stuff. And it was super cool to watch. It was an interesting story.
All that stuff is real, you know, like, like really, they're like, don't sit at your desk and eat lunch, or, you know, just go outside, you know, at the very least, spend an hour, go to the trails. Like, we built these trails for you to go ride. Go
so
ride
them. Cool.
And if like, oh, well, I don't have a bike. They're like, well, we have loaner bikes. Go take a loaner bike, you know.
That's awesome.
It was just sweet.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Just like, and it just really, it's a really good culture of promoting health, you know. And
that's fun. Like, is the whole town kind of that way? Kind of how the Bentonville community is, where it's become more of like, that community's become more bike heavy because of is the whole community there.
It's kind of weird because Trek is in a small town of Waterloo.
Right.
Now, like if you've never been there and had no concept of what it is, it would be like, imagine Jones.
Oh.
Like kind of Jones, Oklahoma. Okay. Or even think like Davis, that the town is 3,336
people. Wow, it's that small.
It's a tiny town.
I didn't realize it was that small.
There's not even a stoplight. There is a four-way stop in the center of town.
I had no idea it was that small.
Yeah, it's just this little town, and it was built up, you know, built around farming.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's like, you know, corn farms as far as you can see, and dairy farms. And it's, but you know, like now, because Trek is there and it's our big employer, there's a lot of Trek employees who work there, but it's still like, you,
it's still a small country town.
Yeah, it is. But what's weird, it's like, okay, it's this country town, but it's like these huge bike lanes through it. And then there's you know, and there's kind of a, like, you know, the highway that connects Waterloo to Madison. It's just fully built bike lane the whole way.
That's
so
awesome.
It's like, it's just fully set up for bike commuting to and from track. It's
that's
it's
funny.
Pretty rad.
That's awesome. Let's go back. Let's get off a track for a second. Let's go back to you and how you got started. So have you ridden your whole life, or did you start in college? Like how did you get into the bikes?
You know, we all, you know, growing up, we all, you know, everybody, I don't want to say everybody, but you know, like people ride bikes when they're kids,
right.
And you know, and I was always the kid building jumps or trying to ride over things that I shouldn't ride over on my cheap BMX bike or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then like once mountain biking started being a thing, you know, like in the 80s, there was this, you know, Huffy made like the replica, you know, you don't want to call it, you know, it wasn't a real mountain bike, but you know, it was like, you know, kind of resembled the original Specialized Rock Hopper. You know, had the little bull moose handlebars. It was called the Huffy Scout, you know, and I would take that thing over to, and I lived in Davis, and I would take it over to the Chickasaw National Recreation area over there in Sulphur when I was a kid. My grandma would drop me off, and I'd go and just ride the gravel trails over there around, you know, because, you know, I was, you know, we were free range kids back then.
Yep.
So I just rode everywhere, you know, and it wasn't really a, you know, but I didn't really do it. I didn't racing.
They're just playing and having fun, just being a kid.
Yeah. And then, I always did that. And then I went to college, and you know, I was going to OU and I just happened to walk into like Wheeler Dealer, you know, Wheeler Dealer once had a shop in Norman.
I didn't know they had one in Norman. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right across from this
Wheeler Dealer is totally resurged now with the new owner and changed all kinds of things.
Yeah. It's good to see.
It's on the upswing again. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I think I might've used some like student loan money or something to buy a Cannondale, you know, but like the, you know, it was like the winter sale and they had a Cannondale SM 500, you know, it was this hideous bike. It was splatter, you know, splatter, black with splatter white and pink decals on it.
Eighties.
Oh, it's so 80s.
So 80s. Dude, that thing is right back in style now.
I know. I'm like, I was actually kind
of
rocked that.
A buddy of mine just bought the most beautiful Allied BC-40. It did full custom everything. He was actually Pistol Pete when he was in college. And so he got the OSU orange and sent it out there, and Drummond was, they were able to put it together with the OSU color orange, and they did the splatter black over it, and it is, it's kind of that 80s vibe, but it's the OSU colors. It's beautiful. It's super cool. Super cool.
That's another brand that's doing some good stuff.
They're doing some good stuff. That's the only time I've ever gone to a factory. So you talking about getting to see it and see it from the inside, Drummond got us in to see the factory and how they make it. Oh, it was super cool.
Yeah, it's just
super cool.
Cool how it happens.
But so whenever you were riding in college, you were always kind of been on the dirt. Is that kind of always been your thing?
Pretty much. You know, I mean, I got on the road too, because that's how you would get fit.
Yeah. Kind of have to.
Yeah. But I remember I was like my buddy Brian Pullen, you know, like we went, we were high school buddies together. Okay. You know, he got a Fisher back in the day. Oh man. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I can't remember how it came up, but like the 12 miles of hell, there's this thing down in Lawton. We should go do it. And I'm like, I don't know. What is this? And we started training. We go over to the Sulphur, you know, to the trails over at Sulphur and ride up Bromide Hill. You know, it's a switchback climb,
funny.
Pea gravel, and we get ready for this race. And
it's amazing how many people have that race as their like thing that kind of got them going.
It was the biggest thing
I've heard that so many times. And I went down there and did a road race once, and but I didn't know what any of that stuff was.
Yeah.
And by the time I had a clue, it was gone.
I know. It's just, it's kind of a shame. It was, you know, kind of looking back on it, I was like, oh, it's just really a terrible course.
That's what everybody said.
Terrible. like, but it was so hard because, you know, the climbs were like straight up.
Mm-hmm.
The descents were straight down.
I've heard it was brutal.
The rocks were razor sharp. If you like, they were either these razor sharp, you know, like this razor sharp rock, or else these giant
like baby
heads and just smash it to pieces. And like, you did not want to crash on that stuff. You did not. And yeah, it was just, you know, we did that, and I was like, I finished it and I was like, holy shit, I am like, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was just
the spark went off.
Dude, we like, I think it finished like 450th or something. Like, I was like, I had no idea what I was doing.
But you finished.
Yeah. And I had my, I've got photos from it. That's took. Awesome. I had my, this old stupid looking helmet, and I had my Grateful Dead stickers on it. No, like a flannel shirt and cut off.
That's back in. You're
yeah.
You just need cut to bust off, it all back out.
Cut off sweatpants and a fanny pack.
Oh yeah.
Which you're also back in.
Also back in.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's like, dude, it's come full circle.
It has been full circle.
I'm cool again.
Yeah. A fanny pack and flannel now on a mountain bike is like, you have to wear it. Yeah. It's like, it's not an option.
Yeah. It's like it's a uniform.
It is a uniform. Yeah.
And so, yeah. And then the next year came around, and I did it again. And I think I finished a little bit higher because I was, you know, like, because mm-hmm. then I was hooked on riding, and I was like riding more. I didn't, you know, and living in Davis, at the time I was going back up in behind Turner Falls and riding back up in there, like me and, my buddy, Mark Oakley, we would just like, jump over fences, just go ride these cattle trail roads, whatever, back up in behind Turner Falls, and just ride it until we couldn't get any further. Then we'd get chased out by the landowner. You know, we were totally trespassing. We had
gravel before gravel was cool.
Yeah. We had no idea like what we were doing. And, you know, back in behind Camp Klassen, we got kicked out of there a few times, and like,
just exploring.
Yeah. Loving just exploring. It. But man, you know, I just go in there every day and just ride. And it was hard, you know, it's climbing.
Yeah.
That's where like I developed, I guess, my technical skills or whatever. Cause if you ride on loose rocks all the time and you just get good at it, you know? And so, you know, like I came back here a couple of years ago and did Medicine Park.
Oh, yeah. That trail is no joke.
Oh God. I was like, yeah, this is just like how it was back in the day.
That
nothing has
places.
Changed. And yeah, just pummeled. Absolutely.
It will beat you to pummeled. Death. Yes.
You know, and I used to think, you know, like Tom Steed, you know, like the Tom Steed race back in the day.
Steed is a place that's, I think it's very much like Medicine Park. Uh-huh. Except Medicine Park, you can fall to like serious injury.
Oh,
Steed,
yeah.
You're just going to fall and like hurt yourself.
Yeah, you're just going to get hurt. Yeah.
You're just going to hit a big rock and it's not going to feel good.
Yeah.
But Medicine Park, you can fall to like bad things. Yeah. That's the best. But they're very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I was, you know, but I always did well at Steed.
Mm-hmm. Steed is so hard. I've only raced it once. It is hard.
Yeah. It was hard. But, you know, I like that stuff, you know, because like, you know, like I never really had like that roadie fitness, you know, like just, you know, just being able to like power away from people, you know, like I always kind of leaned on handling, you know, and if it was a muddy race, I'd be like, oh yeah, it's on, you know, like as long as I didn't break something on my bike, it's good. You know, if it's a super rocky, super technical race.
That's a different world.
Mm-hmm.
I watched because I'm continuing to try to develop that skill. It's clearly not there still. But I'd go down and ride with the guys at Medicine Park, and every race up here, you just ride away from them because it's just turny and fast, right? We can get away from them, but you go down there and I can get to everything first, and then they come past you just like picking their way through the lines, real slow and methodical. Mm-hmm. And I get to the top, I'm gassed. I can't breathe. I'm just foaming at the mouth. And they're like not out of breath. They're totally like normal. And they just like smooth and slow all the way up the climb, picking it apart all the way up. I'm just ramming into stuff and bouncing and running around corners.
Kind of seeing the line and connect, you know, kind of connecting the dots in your head, you know?
Yeah. And the skill that takes going uphill over chunky rocks is just
hard.
It's incredible.
You know, like I remember.
It's cool to watch.
Back in, you know, back in the 90s, I was racing, I think, beginner. And we'd go to Tulsa, you know, when Turkey Mountain was once raw.
Yeah, back when it was really nasty.
Like I haven't been out there.
They've tamed it down a lot.
Yeah, I haven't been out there since I left Oklahoma.
It's completely different.
But I remember we would go and we'd watch the experts ride, and there was this dude Freddie Harth. You know, I don't know if he's still around.
I don't know him, but
you know, the dudes back in the day in like 93, 94 was Freddie Harth and Dan Burrell and Dan's brother, Dave. And these dudes would just roost through there. Like, I just remember, you know, we go to like the rockiest section of Turkey and we watch these dudes ride. And then, you know, here'd come Freddie over the, you know, like over this rock, and he'd just fly through the rock garden, just skipping over the tops of the, I'm like, how the fuck
do I don't know like, how they do it.
And Bobby Turner, this guy, Bobby Turner, was kind of the local honch in Tulsa, you know, and eventually like I ended up riding with him and, you know, and I was like, man, how do you do this? It's like, you have to go fast enough to where you're basically skipping over the top.
Yeah.
You're only touching the tops of the rocks. Cause once you start getting into the dips in between the rocks is when you get bucked, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
but man, you better not miss the line.
Yeah. You just stay on the gas, pedal through it, like with all you got, you know. And
I had that same experience last year. First race of Tour de Dirt was at Keystone. And I don't know if you've ever ridden there.
I've ridden Keystone.
And there's a section of Keystone. And it's not hard. It's just real bumpy. And you can get through it, but it's just not fun. And I hear, it's like the second lap, I hear Drummond coming. He's getting ready to lap me already.
Yeah.
And when he comes through there, I'm, again, gassed because I'm super inefficient in the big chunky rocks. Yeah. And I'm picking my way through it. And I'm like, you know, come on the right. And he just like, same thing, just skips right across the top. And he didn't even like, it's like his suspension didn't even work because it was on top of everything right through it. And he's talking to me like, yeah, man, just come on, come jump on. I'm like, I hate you. Yeah. If you make a mistake doing that, it's going to be tragic. But if you do it, watching them, it's so smooth and easy and effortless. And I'm over here about to die and try not to hurt myself. Oh. But it is a special skill.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I never rode with him. He came on the scene after I left, but you know, my understanding is he came from a moto background.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's a different wiring. All, you know, he's used to seeing shit at 40 miles an hour.
Yeah. They just let it rip and hold on.
So that's a different,
but watching those guys on technical rocks is it's an art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then but I promise you, if you keep at it,
It'll get better.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It just takes practice and confidence.
Yeah. That's the big thing. You just gotta trust it.
Yeah. And the bikes are your bike is so much better than the crappy bikes you're riding with. Uh-huh. It'll take it.
You just gotta do it. Oh man. So did you race mainly mountain bikes through the 90s?
Yeah. I mean, I did. I jumped in, you know, road stuff then, you know, like, I got a road bike in 94, you know, just like a cheap Giant KDX or something like that. And I started doing, you know, just started doing the local rides out of the shop in Norman Buchanan, back when it was owned by Freddie Karcher.
Okay.
And riding with the CRRC guys and Stephen Cate and,
and
Gus Tietzort and Clay Ford and Randy Soto and all those guys. You know, the original Bacon Boys, you know, like Waddell, I know, has mentioned these guys. And so, you know, just started doing the group rides with them and, you know, and you know, being a mountain biker, going on a structured group ride was something else, you know, like, you know, he's like, hey, dumbass, what are you doing? You know, like, why are you rolling off the front? You know, just like, you know.
There's
like,
so much to it.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and back in the days, you know, people would yell at you and you would be receptive to it. And there was, you know, you learned etiquette.
Right.
You know, now it seems like it's a little different, but,
but that same mentality still exists because there are times, because I came from multi-sport, which is clearly the same thing. You have no clue because you're always riding by yourself.
Yeah, right.
Right. But then I started training and I worked at Schlegels and all that stuff. So you start riding with these guys. So you pick it up pretty quicker, learn. And I'm not fit compared to these guys. So I better figure it out so I can just stay in the group. But still, sometimes you go out and go on a group ride and it's either a multi-sport athlete or a mountain biker and they're in the group. And you're like, dude, get to the left so everybody can ride because the wind's coming from the left. Like,
right.
Huh? Oh, never thought about it. Or they're riding their back wheels just all over the place. Just
please
calm down. You're going to wreck the whole group. Yeah. Or when you pull through, do this. Don't just gas it all the way through.
I know. And it's,
there's a lot of group etiquette that if you just have never been around it, you just don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And this, this sounds like this will become a tangent. but one thing I've noticed, like, you know, like I'm, you know, I raced enough road, you know, to did crits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was always like a cat three. I never had a vision beyond. It's like, I just want to do road stuff to be fit. I really loved watching, you know, like I'd watch the Tour de France.
Yep. Same.
And when the cycling, you know, like this before the internet, you know, mm-hmm. like when last year's Flesh Will On would be released on video cassette, yeah. you know, and in the fall, you know, like uh-huh. 6 months after the race, you know, we'd all watch it, you know, uh-huh. like, oh man, look at Andre Schmiel, is just covered in mud, just kicking ass,
you know. It was a year ago.
Yeah, it was just the coolest thing, you know, or uh-huh. just like see the photos in the magazines, just like these freaking hard Euro dudes.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah man, I want to do that, you know. Uh-huh. It's just so badass. And we go out and go ride some gravel roads. And yeah, this is like Paris-Roubaix. This is cool. But back to the point, back to the etiquette thing. Uh-huh. You know, it's like one thing I've noticed, like on, you know, I go on group rides now and it seems like everybody's new, you know, like I have not seen any of these people before, mm-hmm. you know, and then you're like, oh, well, yeah, because they're new and they're doing things that aren't.
They just don't know.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like, why are you riding on the center line?
Yeah.
You know? And,
yeah.
And then you try, and, you know, then people yell at them and then they get mad.
Right.
And then they're not as receptive to criticism as we used to be, you know, like, yeah.
There's a different way of saying it now, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
It's not tough love anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I was over there talking to Chad and Evan, you know, I think it was yesterday, mm-hmm. you know, over there. And we kind of had this conversation. It's like, yeah, you just have to, it's like, you have to have clinics for it now.
Yes, 100%.
And just like have a nice little conversation with them. And yeah, cause you, it's like, you can't really raise your voice anymore mm-hmm. and yell at people.
No.
It's like people getting mad.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and it's weird. It's funny. Cause whenever you go out and do cause now group rides kind of all have, they all kind of have their niche in the community now, which has been great. It's much better than whenever I started, where you'd show up and they're like, oh, it's a smooth, slow ride. And then somebody gets on the front and decides that turns it into a race. Yeah. And then it's just blows apart. And then it's not fun. Now, there are group rides that are like that. But you know going into it,
yeah,
that's what it's going to be. But if a group ride says, hey, we're going to roll at 18, they're going to roll at 18. So sweet. That's significantly better than it used to be.
Yeah.
But there are still times when you get out there and some of the old school guys are like, letting it rip and being the old school roadie, and it does not, they're not, people might not say anything to them, yeah. but it is very well not received on the back end, you know, because it's just, things are different, you know, good or bad, it's just different.
Yeah.
But it's just the way it is. But, you know, I do think it's, I mean, you have so many people that came into sport recently, the past 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
And then, you know, maybe they got on Zwift or whatever and they became really strong. And then they ride with their one or two buddies. So they just flat out don't know how to ride with 30 other people.
Yeah. They're like, that's another recent phenomenon is the mm-hmm. advent of indoor training and people just getting crazy strong, but not developing the skills that it takes to, you know, to get that fast, you know.
It's like, oh, well. Because come watch the first couple races at Wheeler every year.
Oh yeah.
Because people come off their winter fitness, you know, and newer people that have not done crits are like, I want to do it this year.
Uh-huh.
And they take that first corner, especially in the C race, going, you know, 25.
Oops.
And it's kind of got the little brick inlays in the corners, you know, and it's great to watch.
I bet. Yeah.
And want no part of that action.
Check out going into that first turn and just kind of watch from behind.
Yeah. You watch the first turn or the last turn. There's always some action.
Oh man.
Always some action.
Oh man.
It's freaking brutal, but it's good, but it's, man, it is entertaining.
Yeah.
Did you, so you moved away from here. It would have been early 2000s.
It was 2006.
Okay. Yeah. So after college, did you get into the bike industry in college or after college?
No,
or
you just kind of raced your way through? I worked in bike shops. I worked, you know, like just to, you know, because I thought I was, you know, well, because I was in college and, you know, just trying to work hours, mm-hmm. you know, I would just work at, you know, a few bike. I worked at Owls for a little bit mm-hmm. very early on. And then, once I was done with college, you know, I just kind of, I got in at Budget Bicycles, which is now Bike One.
Oh, okay.
And I worked there for a few years, you know, because it's like, you know, in the day it's like, you know, it paid enough to, you know, to meet, you know, meet your bills. And,
yeah.
And then I was just fast enough to where, you know, I would get, you know, I could get like quote unquote sponsorship from Klein or whatever. So, you know, they'd set me up with a frame and I'd build it up with like last year's components or something like that. Or I'd buy a XTR kit, you know, or a build kit, whatever, and then build it up and race it and then sell the bike and, you know, just kind of turn it over like that. And
this is a true bike bum lifestyle. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just kind of a bike dirt bag my whole life. Really. Like I don't, you know.
Yeah.
And so, and then I worked at Wheeler Dealer for a few years up there, worked with Chad Shanks.
Oh yeah.
We were in the
Chad's done great things with his shop.
Yeah. I'm really proud of him, man. Yeah, it's cool to see
him and his wife are good people.
Yeah.
They've done a great job down there.
Yeah. And he was always like top notch mechanic, you know, just like working alongside him. Mm. You know, I could see like if he was going to stick with it, he'd be fine.
Marty's going over to Wheeler.
Is it the, yep. Yeah. Is it the D now? Yeah. I've been trying to get over and go see him, but yeah, it's, That's always been a cool shop.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah.
I'm glad to see the
life is back in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
kind of
disappeared there for a little bit.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah. But it's nice to see it on the upswing again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that. And then, so it was really, that was kind of the bike industry beginnings. And then, I worked for Les Banta for a little while. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I do know Les.
Yeah, I worked at Double Life for a while doing quality control for and just like assembling pumps, you know, just doing like whatever, you know, whatever they needed. And then that's about the time that I left. And
did you leave for Trek?
No, okay. I actually didn't. This is another tangent. I met my wife. She was from Wisconsin, but we kind of run into each other here and there. You know, when I was, you know, I was doing some pretty serious racing back in the early 2000s, you know, I was traveling a lot, going to, you know, I go to Utah, I go to Arizona. And like every now and then I just like see this chick, you know, and talk to her or whatever. And then one day it just like out of the blue, like on MySpace, back in the days of MySpace, I get this note like, hey, you know, and we started just chatting on there. And it's just like, this sounds absolutely crazy. But we knew each other for 3 months, like actually hanging out. I was in Oklahoma, she was in Wisconsin, and we knew each other for 3 months and got married.
Oh my gosh.
I had gone up there.
And how many years ago was that?
It was, it's coming up on 18.
Oh my gosh.
In February, it'll be like 18 years.
That's wild.
Right? I'm like, I look back. I'm like,
your internet dating before internet dating was
a
thing.
Right. Yeah. And we were just like talking on the phone a bunch and she came down here and stayed a few days. And then I went up there and stayed a few days and she came down here. And it was like four trips, her down here twice, me up there twice. We got married on May 22nd. And I stayed, she flew back home. Or no, I'm sorry. We got married up there.
Mm-hmm.
I flew back home and I didn't move up there until July 3rd.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it was just, and I was like, cause the plan was like, she would come down here and then, you know, my job was kind of playing out. And I was like, well, I guess I'll come up there, you know, might as well. And so I packed up all my crap and drove it up to Wisconsin. And I was like, okay, well, we'll only be here for a little bit. Because my aspirations have always been to get west, to get in the mountains, to get to, you know, always wanted to live in Durango. Because Durango is like second home for me. I did lots of racing there. I would go twice a year for the Iron Horse and for whatever summer race they'd have. They'd have a, you know, an AMBC race there. So, you know, the goal was like Flagstaff, you know, somewhere west.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I got a job at Wheel and Sprocket as like service manager there, and that was cool. You know, it's mm-hmm. like one of the bigger mm-hmm. stores in the United States, and it's mm-hmm. a really awesome company. Everybody who works there is super cool, and then I just see this ad in. I don't even remember where I saw it. It was like they were hiring for some cool tech job at Trek. It was like, oh, assembly validation.
Mm.
And I read the description. I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. And I just applied for it. And then within a couple of weeks, they hired me. And I was like, wow, all right, cool. So I guess I'm going to live in Wisconsin now.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, so we refer to it as the bear trap. It's kind of the thing that has held us there.
Uh-huh.
You know? And it's like, well,
so you're going to stay there, or are you going to visit your Colorado dreams at some point?
The goal is to move away, you know,
but still got the mountain dream,
still got the itch. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I love it.
But it's like everywhere is so expensive,
crazy,
you know, and
yeah.
And, you know, just being kind of a bike industry guy, there's like, you know, you just don't,
you can get a job anywhere, but.
Yeah.
Everywhere you want to be is you're making bike money and
it's just not, you know,
Colorado,
it's just,
lifestyle. Yeah, not, Colorado budget.
It's not ideal. You know, like
that's the sucky part.
You know, like, but you know, all of our expendable income goes to travel, because it's like anytime we get a vacation, it's like, okay, we'll go to
for sure.
Travel.
Same.
Like you know, that's the only thing we really spend money on.
And yeah.
Like, well shit, you know, we're already in Flagstaff, already really where I want to be. So like, we don't really need the travel money, you know, so we just live normal.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Your money just stays there instead of going somewhere else.
It's like, I'm already where the cool stuff is. And if you're already if you're already west, then you're already that much closer to all the other cool places.
Yeah. Cause if you're in Flagstaff, you're like a 3-hour, 4-hour drive for everything cool.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Like, buddy of mine lived in Scottsdale, and he moved from here to Scottsdale. And that's why he's like, in 4 to 6 hours, I can be everywhere. I can be on the beach in Mexico. Yep. I can be skiing in the mountains. I can be in LA. I can be in Vegas. I can be in these most amazing parks in Utah.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. In 4 hours to 6 hour drive.
You're just already there in all the cool stuff, mm-hmm. you know, but
yeah,
I mean, and I'm not bagging on Wisconsin. It's got its own cool stuff. You mm-hmm. know, the area we live is in, you know, it's what called the Southern Kettle Moraine, the state forest. Mm. And we have, a trail system that is, you can ride 32-mile continuous loop and not see the same thing. You know,
just, that's
just
cool.
All. And then within that, there are more like small loops. So like you could, I don't even know what the total mileage is, but you know, like I go out every, you know, weather permitting, every right. weekend and do that 32-mile loop. Like,
that's
and my,
awesome.
My deal is like always like, I gotta be a little bit faster than last time. Yeah. You know, like I don't really race anymore.
Uh-huh.
But you know, like I'm always racing myself. I was like,
yeah,
am I better than yesterday? Uh-huh. Am I better than
last
week?
That doesn't stop, I don't think.
Yeah. And so mm-hmm. it's just like, you know, it's like, okay, well, like I got hung up in that sand pit, you know, here. Mm-hmm. So like, I gotta, you know, just gotta nail it this time.
Yep.
You know, it's just like, you know, I don't really get too bothered if, you know, somebody passes me. I'm just right. like, oh, it's all right, I'm 51 years old. Yeah. Whatever, you know, like
going back to your racing, and you said you were racing in Durango and stuff. Like, where did you get to with your racing that you were like, man, this was the pinnacle, this was the peak of where I was at on the trail, on the mountain biking?
Yeah, I think it's kind of weird, you know. Like,
did you do a lot of regional races? Or
yeah, I did. I raced a lot around. You know, obviously raced the mm-hmm. Tour de Dirt series. Did that. You know, competed in that every year. You know, like. At the time, the attendance wasn't really what it is now, you mm-hmm. know, because it was kind of in a lull.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, like I had a lot of really good results in Oklahoma, but I'm like, well, you know, like there weren't really a lot of people.
Right.
I try not to get too big headed about it, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well,
now's your time to
big,
brag.
Yeah, I was a big fish in a small.
Now's
small
your time pond. To reminisce.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, it was cool. I mean, uh-huh. I guess if you look at the numbers, you know, it's like I won the Tour de Dirt uh-huh. 8 times.
Oh, well, that's a lot.
An expert.
Uh-huh.
And I'd go down to Texas and race. And Texas is certainly more competitive. And, mm-hmm. I'd be like top 10 down there,
okay.
you know, mm-hmm. on it. you know, like top five if I was having a really good day, you know, that was good, you know, but they're always fat. You know, the things you learn, it's like, no matter how badass you think you are,
go to a real market and see what happens.
You go, you go somewhere else and there's going to be some dude who's just going to demolish you, you know? And it's just like, okay, this is the ego check, you know?
I wish more people would do that.
Yeah.
Because the people that think they're good.
Yeah.
Locally, and it doesn't matter the sport, because I came from that in the golf world, growing up and in college and after college. Guys hear that, you're like, man, that guy's so good, but he's not. He's locally good. He's not like real good,
right?
You know, and this big time in cycling, you see a guy here, and you're like, that guy crushes everyone here. Yeah. And then, well, Victor is a perfect example. Victor is a great, great human. The dude is so fast. Uh-huh. Like in a mountain bike race here, like, we go to a 6-hour race, he'll win by forever. And then he'll beat the fastest 2-man relay team by himself. I mean, the dude is so fast, but then he goes to one of those big mountain bike races and he'll do great. And he'll finish like 15th or 20th. And you're like, how fast are those 20 guys? Like, that is wild. Cause it's, I know how fast. I know it's how crazy fast Victor is. And those there, and the guys might beat him by like just a crazy end of margin. And I'm like, there's always somebody faster.
Always. And I remember when I was racing sport back in the day, I guess that's, what is it? Cat three now? I'm not sure.
Cat
I'm not
two,
sure.
I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure how it lines up, but you know, back in the day it was beginner, sport, expert, so semi-pro. Pro.
Yeah. They don't have the top one now.
Yeah.
Just like a 1, 2, and 3.
And so, you know, so it would have been cat two, and I was just, you know, I was winning all of the races locally in sport, like just by minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys raced expert, you know, good friend of mine, you know, I kind of see, like, there were two dudes who were kind of my mentors, is Freddie Harth and Dan Burrell.
Okay.
And Freddie was like, man, you've got to cat up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're just sandbagging. It's like, you're never going to get any faster if you don't race people who are faster. You've already beat all of these people. Like, you've already done the thing.
Right.
It's like race expert. I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't think I'm fast. You know, cause I was like, oh, I got to get just like a little bit faster. I gotta have my average speed on my road bike be 23 miles an hour for this 20 mile ride. That's not going to, you know, and I was, you know, it was like kind of data driven before there was data. I was like, I don't know. My numbers don't show it. And it was like, dude, just, you know, just cat up. And, and I did. And like, you know, just, I was like, oh, and so I'm like racing Freddie and Dan and all these dudes. And I'm like, oh shit, they're just like riding away from me.
Yeah.
But, you know, within a couple of months, I was on them.
For some reason, you kind of figure it out.
Yeah. So you have to, it just causes you to step up your game. And that was always kind of my thing. It was like, okay, well, I know the dudes are faster in Arkansas. I know the dudes are faster in Texas and Colorado, you know? So like, that's where I want to go. And it always kind of proved to myself, yeah, you're not really, you know, you're, I could hold my own, but you know, like I wasn't gonna go and win a Texas series race. Cause you know, down there back in the days, it was Will Black and Stu Stafford and these dudes that were just basically pros. I did pretty well in Arkansas. You know, I think I won the Devil's Den race.
That's a great trail.
2004. That was a good year. Like, I think 2004 is probably my best year of racing. Okay. Did lots of traveling that year. Went out to Durango, raced at Purgatory at altitude, died 1,000 deaths, but still, like,
altitude, I was like, is my kryptonite.
Yeah, me too.
agree with me.
Yeah, I just made some really dumb decisions. You know, I'm, you know, like, I've got ADHD and I'm, you know, pretty impulsive, and I was like, I'm just gonna go out there and do it. And
that doesn't work, like, very well, altitude.
Crushed.
Yeah.
But whatever, you know, I had a good time.
Do you think you'll ever get back into racing?
A little bit. I think about it once in a while. Like every year there's this quote unquote race and at that local trail I was telling you about, 30, you know, and it's a timed event, you know, in quotation marks. And so, you know, I do that every year. And I did come back in, I think, 2001, and I did a couple of Tour de Dirt races. This is back when Corey was doing this, his little YouTube, Facebook, whatever, weekend or Wednesday.
Yeah, Corey needs to fire that back up.
Oh, it was so fun.
That was fun.
He got me fired up. I was like, damn, I'll come down and race Tour de Dirt again. Just like, I was like, fuck it. I'll just.
Because he would always have his little beverage there. Yeah. And yeah. Corey needs really, to fire that back up.
I mean, he generated a lot of enthusiasm for me. You know, just like I would tune in every Wednesday and I was like, I'll come down and do Medicine Park. And I'm like, oh God, I really regret this. You know, and, you know, did I did the Clear Bay race that
year. Yeah. Clear Bay is always a great one.
Loved it. You know, I was like, God, this is fun. You know, like, you know, I was in there with Jeremy Black and, and everybody. And it was, I don't know, it was just a good time.
Yeah.
Steven Schmidt, he was, you know, just super, super cool guys. You know, it's like mountain bikers are just cool.
It,
you know,
I agree. It's a, that's what pulled me in. Cause I, when I was doing the multi sport, I'd gotten to the point where I'm just like, dude, I'm over the type A douchiness. Like it just burns you out after a while. And then I went and did mountain bike and I'm like, everybody's just tatted up a little bit of a, like, everybody's super fit, but they don't necessarily physically look super fit, but inside they're like really fit. Everybody just wants to talk about like having a beer, talking about their dogs, camping, cheering everybody on, laughing, talking as you pass people or as they pass you. And I'm like, man, this is just so like everybody's here to do their best.
Yeah.
And the people that are here to race are here to race, but they're still so pleasant and nice.
Yeah.
And everybody's just here to like hurry up and get done so we can have a beer and talk and laugh. like this is amazing.
Yeah. It's just about the experience
and being outside and playing bikes. Just let mountain biking is much about playing bikes as it is anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just fun.
It's just so fun.
There's just something about, you know, like if you're just really in the zone and you're just, you know, you're just cruising through single track and you just lose track of time.
It's meditative.
Yeah.
Mountain biking is a moving meditation.
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like really, you know, it's good for my brain. It's
yes,
like,
me too.
It's, I kind of describe it as my medicine, you know, like, it's like, if I don't do it, I'm pretty grumpy, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I try to, I try to do something physical every day, you know, just to keep my brain circuitry.
Yep. For sure. Wired. Before we get into the yard sale stuff, I know you said you played music.
Yeah.
So tell me about the music.
Yeah. I played, when I was a kid, something with drums.
Clicked. Oh, okay. You and Marty talk about drums.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. He's got his little drum channel. I'm like, always like, how can I do that? You know, like I'm not really technically savvy like that. I'm like, how can you sync up the drums and the music at the same time? That would be really cool. Cause I would like to do that, but I don't have the patience for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to spend money on that, you know? I started out with like, you know, beating on buckets and stuff. Mm-hmm. And my mom probably got sick of that and got me a drum set. And when I was like 11 or 12, and you know, I just picked it up on my own and, throughout, you know, kind of as years progressed through high school, met my buddy, Paco, who is still my best friend to this day.
That's awesome.
And he was a bass player in our band, and we basically, you know, in my teenage years, we had a Metallica cover band for better, you know, we did like Metallica and Misfits covers and Samhain and, you know, just like, you know, we just played metal, you know, thrash metal, you know, it was the late 80s and that's the best. And that's what we wanted to do. And, we had a band all throughout college and, kind of transitioned to like artsy, but you know, it's kind of more Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds influenced, you know, just kind of, you know, when we were the band that the musicians would come and watch, we didn't really like attract the ladies or the dancers or anything, you know, but because we played for ourselves and we played for musicians and that's what we did. And I had a real close miss with the band, the Wallflowers. I had a friend of mine was good friends with Jacob Dylan, and when they were forming and going to need a drummer, you know, he dropped my name and somehow I had brief communication with Jacob Dylan about going out and auditioning and making the cut or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was in college and it was midterms and I was like, oh dude, I can't do that. College is too important, you know? And I was like, and I kind of thought, well, how good, you know, how good is this anyway? And mm-hmm. he sent me a demo and I listened to it. I was like, oh, it's not that great. Cause it was recorded in his home studio right. back in the day with a drum machine. And I was like, oh no, I just can't, you know, and I got mm-hmm. my own band and we're doing our thing and uh-huh. you know, we're going to do something, you know, we're going to be great. Didn't happen. But yeah, then the next summer, the summer of 95, I remember it just plain as day like that. The one headlight song uh-huh. came on and I was like, that was the song that was on the demo.
Oh, shut up.
And I was like, oh shit,
man.
And then come to find out, you know, like the guitarist for the Wallflowers was also a cyclist.
Huh.
And they ended up being real tight with Lance Armstrong back in the day, for better or for right. worse. Uh-huh. But, you know, they played the Ride for the Roses
ride
down in Austin, and they were like super tight, and they go to the Tour de France, and, you know, it's like, damn, boy, I missed that one.
That was the one.
That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty cool. But
yeah, it all worked out just in a different way.
It's all fine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, all right.
So you still play?
Yeah, I still play. We, you know,
are you in a band now, or you still play just for fun and kind of?
I just kind of play for myself. You know, mm-hmm. like I said, I've been in a few bands here and there, and I met my good friend Eric, mm-hmm. you know, Eric Buell through mm-hmm. bands, and that's kind of, and he wants to do like an outlaw country project. And so
I was gonna say, what kind of music do you like to play now?
Yeah, I like to play everything, you know, because okay. I'm, you know, just like with cycling, I try to kind of push the envelope of like, okay, well, you know, I'm not formally educated in music or anything, mm-hmm. but I'm like, I think I can try to play that, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I try to play Latin, you know, like Latin Caribbean grooves mm-hmm. or, you know, jazz, you know, jazz is pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, I'll give Tool a shot.
Mm.
And it's like, ooh.
The videos, and I know you've seen them, the videos of
Danny Carey,
where he just listens to a song for like 3 seconds. It's the drummer from Chili Peppers.
Oh, Chad Smith, yeah.
And have you seen those videos on YouTube?
Oh, yeah, the Drumeo videos.
And
yeah.
he just like sits there and listens for like, he'll listen to a song for like, I can't remember how, like the first 15 seconds or 30 seconds of a song, yeah. and then they turn it off,
yeah.
and then turn it on with the drums out and he'll yeah. play it. If anybody has not seen these videos,
yeah. it's pretty awesome.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
And he hits and pauses and everything in the exact
He nailed all spots. Of the accents. Yeah. He nailed,
it's unbelievable.
Nailed the whole feel of the song. I can't remember. It was like, I think it was a 21 Pilots song that he played.
I've seen him do, I've seen two or three of them. I've seen him do a 30 Seconds to Mars.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a number.
Yeah. It was 30 Seconds to Mars. And there was another one. I've seen two or three of them. And every time I'm just like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
It's like, incredible.
Yeah. He's a pro.
You know, like, it's so cool. Like, I just, because I'm not a music person, so yeah. I don't even understand how that's possible.
Yeah. I always watch those videos because, you know, of course, drummer, I'm mm-hmm. always like watching the Drumeo channel. And they, you know, they'll have different guys on, like they had just recently had Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater
okay.
on, you know, like a super good drummer, and had him play a Nickelback song that he'd never heard, you know, like I'm like, Nickelback, you know,
it's
and
wild.
Dude, he just crushed it. I was like,
I don't understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just cool. You know, like
it's so cool. Drums are so cool. Cause I don't understand. Cause I'm so uncoordinated with my feet, especially my hands. I'm okay with, but my feet to have each limb doing something different.
Yeah.
I don't understand how it's physically possible.
It's something, you know, just something that I always did.
It's like reflexive.
Yeah. You just have a feel for it. But you know, like me, like I can't really play guitar. You know, I don't have that finger dexterity, you know, and I'm like, yeah. and I see dudes just like shredding. I'm like, how do you do, like, you know, like I have trouble like playing guitar, like plucking the string and moving it from, you know, moving uh-huh. my finger on the fretboard at the time it's supposed uh-huh. to happen. It's like, I'm a drummer, but I can't make that connection.
That's interesting.
You know, like, so yeah, I guess everybody's got their
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just something you get a feel for. And once you've played enough songs, you kind of get like, okay, well, here's the A part. And
you kind of understand.
The B part's coming up. And then, okay, in four more measures, it's going to change. And you got to
kind of find the rhythm.
Yeah. The stuff kind of telegraphs itself. If you've heard.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Interesting. Well, all right. you've heard enough of these podcasts over. Thank you for being such a good supporter of it.
Yeah.
We're going to do yard sale. So let's jump in.
All right.
So actually, I have my phone because I thought of a couple of other questions the other day that we're going to add to yard sale.
All right.
But the first one, of course, that everyone gets, favorite piece of equipment under $100.
Hmm. For cycling, I would say a good bright tail light, you know, like the Bontrager flare.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it from miles away. Or a mile away. I think it's probably one of the best things you can do for personal safety on the road.
Agree.
It's a shame that you have to do it.
Right.
But if I'm going to say something is really worth spending the money on that's under $100, that is going to be it.
What's favorite bike you've ever ridden?
Favorite bike I've ever ridden. Man, I got to say, for mountain bike, I have a 2020 Top Fuel.
Nice.
It's my absolute favorite bike. I love it. I think it's hard to talk. I got a super caliber, a couple of years ago, because I wanted a little bit faster bike, and it is wicked fast. Mm-hmm.
Is that the 100 mil?
It's 100 front, but it's 60 mil in the rear.
Yeah. There's not much there.
Yeah. It's not much, but it's enough.
But
For longer rides, you're tired of sitting on it after a while. But like the Top Fuel, you can just ride it for hours. Mm. I just love it. Favorite road bike. I have an Imonda SLR. Mm. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's as good as anything out there. Yeah, that's
okay.
Probably my favorite.
What was the coolest thing you got to see at Trek?
The coolest thing I got to see at Trek, I would say, just kind of watching bikes happen. I just think of the current generation Madone. What's out there? Just seeing how that started with the previous version of the Madone and everybody, everybody in the road team or in the product group was invited to come in and write on post-it notes. Like, what do you like about this bike and what don't you like about this bike? And everybody wrote, well, I like this and, this looks dumb, and stick it here. And this could be improved. Like, I don't like this seat clamp,
Interesting.
And everybody, soon enough, the bike was just covered in post-it notes. If it was favorable, it was a yellow post-it note. If it was a criticism, it was a red post-it note. And so they just kind of lined them all up and took it all in and applied that, really listened to the criticism.
That's awesome.
And then what came out is the current one, like it or not, with the with the IsoFlow. It's divisive, but it works. And what's cool is seeing the claims. People, oh, this is you don't have the numbers to back that up.
Right.
I was like, I don't know, man. It all went to the wind tunnel
and got
validated.
Yeah,
it was just kind of cool seeing that.
Who was either the most famous or the coolest person for you to see come through? Like, it could be athlete or celebrity to come through Trek while you were there.
I would say the most.
Because clearly you guys got to see all the racers when they came up for cross.
Yeah. But there were a few, Tony Kanaan, the IndyCar driver, he would come in cause he has a connection and he gets his bikes and he comes and picks them up.
Yeah. A lot of those guys.
Yeah. Really cool.
Ride bikes. Yeah.
But the weirdest the coolest and what seemed to me the most random, kind of celebrity guy who showed up was Luke Bryan.
Hmm.
I guess he's a rider and he came and picked up his, I think he had a stash or something, something he was, he'd go take hunting because he was playing a show nearby. And so he just came and hung out for the day and
that's cool.
Everybody kind of hung out with him. I was like,
huh,
this is really weird. You know, I was like, That's cool.
Pretty cool.
Bo Jackson would come in.
Yeah. He has a big ride.
Yeah. He's super cool dude. And of course, Gary Fisher, man, that guy.
I bet you just vibe with that. I
love Gary Fisher. Just like when he'd just walk into the building and it was just like sparkles and butterflies and balloons, you know, it's just like, wow, look, you know, he just has this presence about him, you know, it's just like, it was just really cool.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Favorite place you've ever ridden?
Favorite place I've ever ridden, that would say Durango's always been at the top of my list. But I would say, recently I swear Marquette, Michigan.
Okay.
You would not think it. It's on the upper peninsula of Michigan.
Oh, it's gonna be beautiful.
Right on the shore of, Lake Superior. And it has just some of the best single track I've ridden. You know, I know that there are better places in the world, but for me, for whatever reason, it's my favorite because it just has the right amount of climbing, has the right amount of technical, the right amount of flow, you know, it has the perfect mix of everything. And then, you know, like these huge gorges with these, you know, these rivers running through them. And, you come out and then you can, you know, you see Lake Superior there and you're just like, you know, it's just pretty powerful to just see that, the lake and like, you know, like, you know, kind of the history behind it. And, I don't know. It's just a really awesome place. I would say as far as in the past 10 years, that is honestly my favorite place. You know, like I haven't gotten to Bentonville to give it a solid go yet, but, Marquette's like freaking awesome.
Cool. What's a dream place to ride? If you could ride anywhere in the world, anywhere, doesn't even have to be mountain or road. Doesn't matter. What would it be?
I would say, you know, I watch the World Cups every year and I'm like, the Albstadt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. When I see that course, I'm like, God, I would just love to ride that. I just want to be there. I want to see those views in person.
I would like to see one of those courses in person, see how brutal they are. Yeah. Drummond went up and worked, I think it was with Vittoria, the snowshoe race this year. And we were texting back and forth. I was like, what's it like? And he's like, it's so hard. He's like, the XC course, he's like, it is brutal.
Those XC courses that they're doing in the World Cup now are...
Well, in the one in Bentonville that they have when they had the UCI race there, I've gone and watched it. That little course that they built there is so much climbing.
Yeah.
And then he said, I've always wanted to try the downhill just once, just to see what it's like. He's like, when I was there, there is no chance. He's like, there is no way... I don't even understand how it's possible.
Nope.
And for somebody at that level to say that, I'm like, I've got to see this. Yeah. I've got to see it at some point in my life because I just can't understand it.
Yeah.
And I know TV doesn't do it any justice.
It doesn't do it any justice. Mm-mm. Yeah.
And they just crush it.
In the XC racers, there's this,
those, you know, drops.
Like, yeah. And then like, they're just like these skinny people and you're just like, holy shit, look at that, what they're doing, you know, like
wild drops on like a 100 mil travel bike and just letting it rip.
Yeah. Like, I'm like,
no, thank you. I usually end with advice for a new rider. So we're going to do that one, but I want to end with a different one. So advice for anyone that's new to cycling. We talked about people coming into the sport in the past handful of years. Mm-hmm. So what would be a number one piece of, let's say for a mountain biker, because that's your background.
Yeah.
What would be your number one piece of advice for a new mountain biker?
Ooh. Don't take it that seriously.
Mm-hmm. Great.
But also, you know, like try to ride with people who are faster or better than you and just watch their lines. Because That is the best way that I improved is just riding with people who are better than me.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Because it's not so much that they're going to give you instructions. It's just like, you just see what they do. Like, he moved his hip a little bit, you know, like, cause it's all about body English and feel really. And it's like when you see it happening right in front of you, you're like, and you, kind of copy that, mm-hmm. you know, then you really get a good feel of it, you know?
Yeah. You definitely see that how they move so much different than how you move.
Yeah.
It's weird. And they don't, and then you say something to them and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't even think about it.
How they set a corner up, how they move on the bike, how they lay the bike and move their body a different direction or a line choice. And you're like, I never thought about that.
And I know, you know, like I see these instructional videos on YouTube or whatever, you know, I'll watch them every now and then and say, hey, maybe I've got something I can learn because I'm not the best rider in the world. Maybe. And then like, they'll explain something. And I'm like, oh,
that makes sense.
I know. Oh, okay, cool. You know, like, cause I see it happening and you know, and it's stuff that I'm doing, but like, I don't think about it. And then when I think about it, then I can really, really put it into use. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Good example of the pointing your knee at the apex of the turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just like a simple thing that I don't think about.
Right.
But when I did think about it, like turning your hips,
it makes it.
It's like, oh, well, that makes it that much smoother.
Yeah. Interesting.
When you're conscious of it, it's like,
yes. I do the same thing with my head looking around corners.
Yeah.
Cause you're kind of doing it, but when I really like exaggerate it, I'm like, oh, that was so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
I gotta pay attention to that.
Little subtle things that really make a difference.
All right. Here's what we're going to end with, unless you have something else. What's something that that people think is so cool or so great or a product or event or whatever it is that you think is really overrated?
Ooh.
So here's your time to rant about people who think something's way too cool. Ooh. And you think that's so stupid.
Well,
or so not necessary.
Yeah. Oh man, I could really get myself in a spot.
That's what this whole question's about.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Okay. So, gravel has its place.
Okay.
You know, but you know, I think, you know, there's a lot of hype going on around gravel bikes and they're super versatile, but you know, like really for like kind of the chunky gravel of Kansas, or, you know, like Emporia area kind of accepted. And I know there are places with super gnarly gravel. Like you don't really necessarily have to have a gravel bike to ride on unpaved surfaces. Let's say that an unpaved surface, because you know, like, I don't want to be like the old man, like shouting at the sky, but you know, we used to go and ride on those roads north of Edmond, you know.
Oh yeah. Like, it was just packed dirt.
Uh-huh. Those on 23C slicks pumped up to 120 PSI because we did, I mean, we didn't know any better, but you know, like also we would watch, we would watch like Paris-Roubaix. It's like those guys are riding that crazy shit. On maybe 26s.
Maybe.
Yeah. And they're just crushing. Yeah. You know, they're like hauling it. And so it was just like, and it's like when I see gravel, I speed up because that smooths it out. And, you know, I know there are consequences. I've experienced them. But yeah, I think sometimes in some markets, gravel bikes are overrated. Like
I would totally agree.
In southern Wisconsin, we have all of the roads are paved.
Oh,
all of them.
Interesting.
It's interesting trivia about southern Wisconsin is that all of the roads are paved because it has something to do with the dairy industry and getting milk from the dairy farms out in the sticks to Milwaukee for distribution.
Makes sense.
And so to find a gravel road in southeastern southern Wisconsin is super tough. And so we have this rail trail, which is this crushed limestone gravel trail. And dudes are buying gravel bikes to go ride that. I'm like,
oh, I made that mistake one time on a rail to trail route. We put on big beefy tires. So we didn't know. Yeah. We went to the Katy Trail in Missouri. Me and another buddy bike packed it. We're like, man, I got to put our gravel tires on all stuff. And I got there. I'm like, we could have rid this on our road bike. Like it would have been so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, so I guess the thing is like every bike is a gravel bike if you ride it on gravel.
That's a true story. It
doesn't really matter. You just adapt to it and enjoy yourself and don't worry about equipment.
I like it.
Cause, yeah, it's in the end, It's all about the experience that you have on the bike with the people you're with or the people you're not with. Mm-hmm. If it's just you just in your head, then that's the way it should be. Yeah.
Don't
obsess about equipment.
Just go ride your bike. Yeah. Go play bikes.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And hang out with your buddies.
Yeah, totally.
Forrest, thank you so much for coming in. I'm glad we caught you when you were in town because you head out in like 2 days.
Yeah.
So thank you so much. Enjoy your concert while you're here.
Absolutely.
And thanks for being a fan and a supporter. And is there anything you want to sign off with? Or
no, just...
Cool. Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time.
Absolutely.